Great. So I want to tell you about some now a few years old work, like from my thesis a while ago. And I hope that you just interrupt me a lot and like throw spitballs or something, because it'll make the talk better. So last week, Alex explained the AKSC construction. And what AKS and Z did was in the sort of shortest version of the construction is that they said, well, if you have some I have to choose letters now, and I wasn't ready to choose letters. So if you have an oriented closed manifold, n-dimensional, and so that'll be the source. And if I have a target, this will be the source. And if I have a target manifold, which is a DG manifold with a symplectic form of, okay, I'm never going to be able to use n. I'm sorry. I told you I have to fix my letters early and other. I'm going to call this a d-dimensional manifold. And if I have a target, which is a DG manifold with symplectic form of degree some other d prime, and maybe I mean minus d prime. Well, so be it. Then
D prime means D prime shifted.
It's just another letter. I don't know very many letters in the alphabet. And so when I can't come up with another one, I put a prime next to it. So D prime is the letter that comes after D.
I was asking, it is D prime shifted.
Really means that it's not shifted. Or minus D prime shifted.
I don't know.
Okay.
Symplectic means symplectic. Degree means cohomological degree. Then what AKS and Z said was they said then the mapping space from, well, at least the DG algebraist version of the Durham stack of M to X is also symplectic with the symplectic form of degree D prime minus. And up to deciding whether I meant minus or plus, this is the sort of the content of the AKS and Z construction. And it's been generalized in various ways, most of which I'm not going to try to review, although they're important stories. So what I'd like to tell you, somehow my version is, so my goal for to tell you what I want to tell you, my goal for the talk. Yeah.
How much pain did you want to make this statement or did any students in the Nobel Award?
I would say that because I'm emphasizing DG manifolds so that I can avoid the parts that I find deeply mysterious about infinity categories. So the map is.
So saying to you not to say the manifold is symplectic, usually just by symplectic form.
When I say, so in, okay, there's various sort of levels of generality. You can do the construction. There's various ways to interpret all the adjectives I said. The way AKS and Z did it was DG manifold means supermanifold with a U1 grading and something and a cohomological vector field. Symplectic means symplectic for them. It doesn't mean something worse than that. It just means you have an honest to God 2 form, which is honest to God closed. And if
Not
some.
hold up to exact or.
So you certainly could do that. That's not what I think AKS and Z did, but you could if you want. And there's an invertible for them meant something precise if you want to sort of generalize. So, like, there's a beautiful work of Pantev-Tau and Bakke and Vitsotsi. Generalizing our construction to the somehow more homotopically coherent version. But in AKS and Z's paper, that was like, it was a sort of, you know, DG manifolds were already a really kind of new thing. And they're an important crutch for derived manifolds.
How does siblet form of this space look like? Is there any all over?
Right, so we had the formula last week, so I don't want to I'll finish the construction. So I do actually want to mention what Duram's so I wrote M Duram. M Duram means something in algebraic geometry, which is not what it means in my talk. So I'm gonna be a sort of 1990s DG geometer. And in the 1990s, M Duram meant the shifted tangent bundle to M with the cohomological vector field given by the Duram D. It is that DG manifold. It's not the Duram stack of something for AKS and Z. If you're PTV and V, then it means something much more fancy and infinite and categorical. But I'm gonna be in this level of generality. And then this mapping space is some explicit infinite dimensional manifold, because this is an explicit manifold. This is some explicit infinite dimensional DG manifold. And the symplectic form has some completely explicit formula that the symplectic form on the mapping space is an integral over M of the symplectic form on X. I mean, maybe a pull. OK, there's like some. Okay. And I think last week Alex also talked about the sort of Hamiltonian enhancement of this, where everything comes with where everything's not just closed but exact. So for instance, there's an important version of the story that I'm not going to really dwell on, where you ask that the homological vector fields on X be a Hamiltonian vector field. So what I'd like to do in this talk is I'd like to give a Poisson generalization. And I'd like to address this word close. I'd like to somehow do this locally. A local patch of a manifold, whatever it is not a closed manifold. I know that much about local patches of manifolds, so I would like to give a version that makes sense locally. And then I'd like to talk about the meaning of the word coisotropic. So let me mention that in the original AKS and Z story, well, I don't remember if it was in AKS and Z's papers. It probably already was, but certainly it's a big part of the PTVV retelling, was that that there is a version here that if M is open, no, if M is open, you don't know what to do. But if M is compact with boundary, then in the original AKS and Z story, and X has a Lagrangian, then you can still do something. And so when I say Poisson generalization, I mean I want X to be merely Poisson, then Y merely coisotropic. So specifically, and again, probably AKS and Z already knew how to do this, and PTV and V explain quite a lot about this step of the construction, that what you can do is that you can look at the maps from M into the bulk. You can restrict a map to the boundary. DM to the bulk, or you can look at maps from DM into Y, and you can take the fibered product, and this is again symplectic. And so I want something like that for Poisson. That's sort of the goal of what I want to explain how to do. It's sort of a Poisson version of this whole. Okay. Now I'm going to erase the I guess that stuff. Because that half of the board is verboten. So, I'm going to begin by giving you my sort of a context for differential, for digi geometry. And I said I want to allow Poisson targets. I don't want to have to handle macroscopic objects. So I'm going to work in my sort of target spaces. Are going to be infinitesimal. So what I mean by that, so now let me define for you. So the definition is the following. So I want to tell you what infinitesimal DG geometry is. That's my goal. So unless you guys already talked about this in the seminar. I haven't been going to the seminar the whole semester, so I don't know what you guys have said already. So what do you need to do calculus? To do calculus, you need to be able to take derivatives. That's somehow the essence of calculus. And so in particular, if you like Taylor series, I'm not very good at taking derivatives, but I know what the derivative of a Taylor series is. So an infinitesimal manifold. It's whatever it is so that its functions are a power series, right? Or power series. So that's a sloppy definition. So the correct definition is the following, that to give an infinitesimal manifold, what I have to do is I have to give you. So one way I could present a manifold is I could just present you coordinates. So to present an infinitesimal manifold, I can hand you a vector space, local chart, which I'm maybe for now going to call V. Maybe I'll also call it X. No, I'm going to call it, anyway, a vector space. And the point is that an infinitesimal manifold is so small that I only ever need one coordinate chart to cover it. That's one of the huge advantages of infinitesimal geometry is you never have to handle like things that can't be, everything's affine. In infinitesimal geometry, all spaces are affine because you can, like, you just need one chart for any space. So it's very convenient. So now I have to tell you somehow, that's how I present to you a manifold. I hand you a vector space. And now I have to tell you kind of how to, like, what the isomorphisms of manifolds are. And the point is that a map of, a smooth map of infinitesimal manifolds from x to y of these infinitesimal manifolds is just a power series on x with values in y. That's somehow the data that I have to give you a chart. And there's a fancier way to talk about this, which is that you could almost talk, so you have options for how to say this. There's sort of two options. There's an okay option, which is to think of X as the spectrum of the power series ring on the dual vector space. I mean, I'm being very sloppy. I'm going to mix somehow vectors, like the name of the chart and the name of the manifolds. Yeah, that's why it's only an OK option, exactly. So an OK option is to think of X as like spec of power series ring on the dual vector space. And the better option, as Yiha points out, that's like not very good in infinite dimensions. Oh, I should have, I erased it, but on my list of goals, the big reason why I was doing this was to do something that allowed infinite dimensional manifolds. So this is a disaster in infinite dimensions. I mean, the whole notion of symplectic is a bit of a disaster in infinite dimensions. Although the notion of Poisson is a disaster in infinite dimensions. Actually, it's been this long-standing problem. Let me just make a side remark. In like DG world, maybe you can do something. But if you're really a symplectic geometer, like there are notions of symplectic in infinite dimensions that have to do with kind of putting like when you really start to do infinite dimensional manifold theory, you have to really handle sort of questions of functional analysis. If you want an actual infinite dimensional manifold, do you want to model it by Banach spaces? Or do you want to model it by Hilbert spaces? Or do you want to model it by Fréchet spaces? The qualitative behavior of infinite dimensional manifolds depends on those choices. Not just like the details, but the qualitative behavior. Whether there's an inverse function theorem depends on whether you say the word Fréchet or Banach. And in any case, you can always sort of talk then about like symplectic forms, which are maybe continuous and somehow non-degenerate. And there's a decent notion of symplectic forms. There's really no good notion of Poisson stuff, unfortunately. I mean, but I'm an algebraist, so algebraically there's a good notion of Poisson, and that's what I want. Anyway, the better option for this stuff is, so this is like, this is sort of, this is somehow as an, so by this I mean, the OK option, I didn't finish the thought. The OK option means that then you think about X in terms of its function algebra, and then you say that the maps from X to Y are the maps of, right over here, you think of Hom from X to Y in the OK version. You think of Homs from X to Y as like sort of infinitesimal manifolds. As something like the maps of commutative algebras from whatever the kind of the completed, okay, maybe I'll write this as sim hat, the completed symmetric algebra of X dual from Y dual to the completed symmetric algebra of X dual, but that's wrong. That's not a correct definition, and you have to add some topology. And then you have to think about topology. And I'm not very good at thinking about topology, so there's a better, totally algebraic thing you can do, which is what I really want to do, which is that you don't work with completed symmetric algebras, but you work with co-algebras. You think of X as, the vector space X is giving you a co-algebra. So you look at of co-commutative co-algebras from the symmetric co-algebra on X to the symmetric co-algebra on Y. And let me emphasize that symmetric co-algebra is not the co-free construction. So this is the context I have in the back of my mind. And now I can tell you what DG world is. An infinitesimal DG manifold is going to be the same data as giving So the point was that, okay, the point of the previous thing I just said was that somehow infinitesimal geometry is the theory of co-commutative co-algebras. And so infinitesimal DG geometry is going to be the theory of co-commutative DG co-algebras. So now I can unpack that a little bit. I want to make one more technical simplification in my context for infinitesimal geometry, which is that for technical reasons, I'd really like, you know, I said I had an infinitesimal manifold. I'd really like to work with formal neighborhoods of, I want to think of my infinitesimal manifold. It is a formal neighborhood of a point. I'd like that point to be something, some part of the data of the manifold. So, I want to do infinitesimal DG unpointed. I won't even erase. So what I want, I want infinitesimal points of geometry. So that means that the point itself, the origin, all of my maps preserve the origin. My morphisms, my smooth maps. Should preserve the origin. So in terms of DG algebras, that means the following. In terms of DG algebras, that means that I look at, so what is a co-commutative co-algebra map? So in terms of co-algebras, that means that so the point is that if you this full symmetric co-algebra, well, it has like a sim 0 plus a sim 1, so on. Sim 0 itself, this is the origin. And so the maps I want are things that sort of take sim 0 to sim 0. A generic coalgebra map could do something funny in the concern. So I'm saying I only want maps kind of greater than one part. Greater than one part of Y. This is a terrible way to think about things. I say it's a better option, but it's not the best option. The best option is just to work in coordinates and do calculations. So the best option is to say, well, I want co-algebra maps. I only want co-algebra maps from the positively graded part of X to the positively graded part of Y. Now, it's not true that the symmetric algebra, so in co-algebras, the symmetric co-algebra is not the co-free co-algebra. It's not true. You know, so the point is the following. In algebras, comms from algebras from sim of V to sim of W, sim is the, or to anything. The symmetric algebra is the free algebra. So comms of algebras from sim of V to A is comms of vector spaces from V to A. Comms of coalgebras from A to sim V is not comms of vector spaces from A to V. It's not the co-free construction. In fact, the co-free construction for coalgebras is astronomically large and doesn't play well with base change. You take the co-free coalgebra and then change the base of your fields, you don't get the co-free coalgebra. I'm sorry. It's just not how coalgebras work. But it's pretty darn close for these kind of positively graded guys. In fact, it is for the positively graded guys. So to give a coalgebra map from the positively graded part of X to the positively graded part of Y, you just have to give a map into Y. So the data, and this kind of boils me back to what I was saying before, that it's a power series on X with values in Y. The data of a map from the positive part of X to Y is the sim of a coalgebra map. The positive part of Y is just a map is a linear map from X to Y. And so I can expand it out in coordinates. So it's a many to one map, a sequence of maps, a sequence of trees. And if you know operad theory, this is some of the point where operads start to get in the game. Somehow the composition of maps from symmetric algebras, from symmetric coalgebras, is something about composing trees instead of in operads. So I want to think of the data of this of such a map is the data of a map with sort of one Y output and some number of X inputs. What about vector fields? So a DG manifold should be, the old-fashioned way to talk about DG manifolds is you give me a Z-graded manifold and a cohomological vector field. So just like maps are given by a sequence of, you know, morphisms are a sequence of maps, so are vector fields. So to give a vector field, on the infinitesimal manifold X. Hey. Again, what I have to do is I have to give you a sequence of maps. Well, the point is, what is a vector field? A vector field, you expand it out in coordinates. A vector field looks like, the vector field looks like some function of x, vdx. And if I put coordinates in, I should think of, some function of some i-tuple of functions for the i-tuple of coordinates. So to give the vector field is it also to give a sequence of maps with some number of inputs and one output. And now they're all sort of x maps. Because here's a power series. I mean, vdx is a map that takes in a coordinate of x, so it's a map from the dual to x to the sim of the dual. So if I go the vector field should if I work a covariate or quadrivariate. In co-algebras, you should think of this of a vector field as a map from many inputs to one output. If you're an algebra, if you like algebras, a vector field takes in one input and puts in many inputs. Co-algebras take one out. Okay, so that's the point. And then what is a cohomological vector field? So the difference between linear maps and vector fields at this level is how they compose. If you want to compose, sorry, the difference of smooth maps. So smooth maps composed via Fa-Di-Bruno formula. If I have some map next to y to g, these are smooth maps. So the data of f is some collection of corollas of rooted trees like that, and the x inputs and y outputs, and the data of g is some other collection of maps. Then the data of g composed with f, if I want kind of some number of inputs and some number of outputs, is some sum over trees. Of you put a single G output. Well, G takes in a bunch of Y inputs, and then on every Y input you put an F. And then you put all of your X inputs into those. And you have some rule that has some factorials that depend on whether you like Taylor series. When you have a Taylor series, I don't know if you like divided powers or regular powers or not for your Taylor series. And that choice will affect what the combinatorial rules are, the coefficients. But somehow composition of power series. This is all I'm telling you is I'm telling you what composition of power series looks like. It has some expansion. Fa-Di-Bruno formula, I mean, this was like some 17th century result, was the fact that the power series of a composition is the sum over trees of the power series. So that's how smooth maps compose. Whereas for vector fields, the point is the vector fields only act in one spot. So the composition of vector fields is you just take a, you just, like the vector field composition. Well, vector fields. That's right. So a vector field, you can compose. Sorry, what I mean to say is the bracket of vector fields. If I have two vector fields, they have a bracket. And the bracket of vector fields, so I want to emphasize this, the composition of smooth maps is not linear in the smooth maps. The bracket of vector fields is linear, and the bracket of vector fields is has some shape that's like, it's some sum over trees. But now a typical tree is going to have exactly two vertices. There'll be a V vertex and a W vertex. Or you could have them in the other order. And a cohomological vector field. So what's a cohomological vector field? A DG structure on a coalgebra is, in particular, a vector field. It is should be a derivation of the coalgebra structure. And it should be a cohomological vector field. So it should solve that it should be a degree 1 degree one. I'm just not going to even try to get cohomological versus homological degrees right for this talk. It's a degree one vector field such that it self-commutes. That's not automatic for odd vector fields. And you can expand out those rules. And so that's the same as saying that, so the data, so the end result is that, so to summarize, to present DG pointed infinitesimal manifold, what I have to do is I have to give you the following data. Well, I need to give you a z-graded vector space. And I need to give you a cohomological vector field on it. So I need to give you a bunch of many-to-one maps. Sort of for every n, an n-to-1 map, where that map, I don't know what to call it, V, I guess. And that map should be of degree one. Or maybe I mean minus one, but again, I'm not going to try to do cohomological versus homological gradings. And then there's a single axiom. Oh, and I said they should be, remember, I want to do pointed maps. So my n's, point is the following. Geometrically, if I have a pointed space, a vector field, if I'm working in the category of pointed spaces, what are vector fields? They're infinitesimal automorphisms. If I'm working in the category of pointed spaces, the point should stay fixed. So the vector field shouldn't be able to push it off itself. The vector field should vanish at the point. I'm telling you the zeroth Taylor coefficient should be zero. So that means that the linear maps are just sort of created by from one to infinity. And all of this stuff about pointed stuff, and what's secretly going on is that I'm going to be invoking a whole bunch of statements in causal duality, which are somehow either false or at least hard when I don't have, when I allow zero to one, sort of zero area operations. And then there's an axiom which says that the sum over trees that have the shape of one vertex at the bottom, some edges in, one of which has a vertex on it. And you know, there's some, like these, all of these are sort of symmetric maps. I said n to one map, but it should be a map from the symmetric coalgebra, so it should be a symmetric n to one map. And when you take the sum over trees, you should symmetrize the edges of the top. The sum over trees is zero. It's the cohomological condition. And now I'd like to slightly modify my definition. I mean, I'll just reorganize this data one last time to get me into the context I really want to be in. So the last reorganization I want to give is that if you had such data, so in arity one, what do you have? You have a one-to-one map. The part of the data, the vector field, is its first Taylor coefficient, which is a one-to-one map. And if you look at this equation, this was you know, n many equations. In arity one, this equation just says that the one-to-one map squares to zero is already squares to zero. So I'm gonna change my mind, and I'm gonna decide that that one-to-one map is actually a linear differential. I just want to reorganize this. So instead of saying a z-graded space, I'm gonna say a chain complex. And the rest of the data is gonna be starting in arity two. But now it's not this equation anymore. Because when I wrote down the original equation, look in arity two, for instance. So in arity two, what you find, how, you know, you either had sort of a two in and one, like how to get from two to one if you only have sort of, I mean, there were some, I said some, but there's some numbers and some signs, all of which are like, there's no good way to fix them. You just pick a convention and you go with it. And like, in my various papers on the subject, I pick some conventions, and they're at least within the paper, it's consistent. The different papers might have different conventions. And also, any two papers, okay, just as an aside, never trust anybody's signs ever, and never quote formulas out of the box if they have signs. Just always rederive them, because the signs might have been correct in the paper if that author was careful, but they probably weren't, and they're certainly not the same as your conventions. And it's not just, there's a beautiful talk you should watch on YouTube. It's by J.P. Sayre called How to Write Mathematics Badly, and he makes the same point. And he actually goes on to say that he doesn't believe most theorems in homological algebra except for the theorems proved in characteristic two. Anyway, in Arity 2, you have a map that's like from V to V, or you could have a V map on the, sort of a 2-to-1 map on the bottom, or you know, a 2-to-1 map on maybe the other side, and maybe there's some numbers. Maybe one of these has a half or a 2 somewhere. It's some one, you know, 2s and halves and signs. So if you think of this 1-to-1 map as part of the as the differential, so if you think of this as being the differential on the vector space, on the vector space, the linear differential. I'm going to stop writing my, I'm just going to start drawing these as bullets. So think of this as the differential. Then what you find out is that this, what you see is that this equation is the same as saying that this left-hand side of the equation is just the derivative of the 2-to-1 map, where now this derivative is going on. This derivative, this is the derivative, the differential on the space of linear maps from sim 2 of the vector space to the vector space. And you can continue to expand this out. So if I think of, so the way I'll reorganize this is that I have a bunch of n to 1 maps, which I'll start just writing as a bullet, where now n is at least 2. And the rule is going to be that the derivative of any n to 1 map is a sum over trees with 2 vertices. And that's the sort of the way I'll organize the opera. And now you can really see where I'm using the fact that I have my arities starting in degree at least 2. If I were allowing arities in degrees 0 and 1, this sum would be. But because my arities start in degree at least 2. So what's the point? Well, the point is that there's some main example. Oh, I'm erasing it. Well, so the example. So this is so the okay. What's the point? The point is I spent half an hour trying to convince you that there's this interesting operad, which is the operad of whose algebras are a chain complex together with a sequence of maps solving this differential equation. This is an operad that you've seen, or you might have seen it before. The point is that this is the L infinity operad. So there's a precise statement there. So the point is the following. So the point is that, so let me expand that a moment. So what I'm saying is that an example of an infinitesimal space, DG manifold, is the following. If G is a DG Lie algebra, then you can take G, shift it in degree by 1. So what is a DG Lie algebra? That means that there's a degree 0 map from the wedge 2 of G. So it's a 2-to-1 map. It's anti-symmetric. And it solves a Jacobi, and it has its derivative is 0, and it solves a Jacobi equation. And a sum over trees 0. If I shift in degree by 1, this equation stays true and this equation stays true. But shifting degrees just changes what symmetric means. And, like, a symmetric map on a shift is an anti-symmetric map on the original guy. So the point is that g shifted by 1 is an example. If g is a DG Lie algebra, then g shifted by 1 is an infinitesimal, is an example of this. An example of this, where the 2 to 1 map, or the 2 to 1 map, is the bracket. And all higher maps are 0. I said this was the L infinity Lie algebra, or the L infinity operand, because, if you wanted to do a derived version of Lie algebras, which many of you already know how to do, maybe all of you, you'd say, this is a funny, like, in derived algebra, I should just never give you equations. I should always give you sort of, like, I shouldn't ever impose the Jacobi equation in DG algebra. I should say, well, the failure to be a Lie algebra should be exact. And the point is that when you start expanding this out in arity 3, so if you expand this out, what you find is that, like, you know, what do you get? You got a 2 to 1 map, and you get that the Jacobiator of the 2 to 1 map is D of the 3 to 1 map. So at least on cohomology, you get a Lie algebra. And you can keep going. And anyway, the point is that there's some fairly well-known state. Which says that DG Lie algebras are everything. So you can take the, so I implicitly presented on this board, I implicitly presented an operad, which I named the L infinity operad. Let's say you didn't know anything about Lie algebra. So there is this operad written here. The operad is that to give you an algebra, to give you a sequence of maps, and they have to solve this differential equation. And so the point is that this operad has some nice properties. First of all, the cohomology operad is Lie up to some degree shifts. But better than that, I told you any Lie algebra gives you an L infinity algebra. Just I gave you how to do it. So in fact, I gave you a map from, if I have a way to turn any Lie algebra into an L infinity algebra, that means I have a map from the L infinity operad to the Lie operad. So I gave you a map from L infinity to Lie. And this statement is actually enhances to say that this is a quasi-isomorphism. All right, it's a quasi-isomorphism, and it's a surjection. Both of those are pretty easy to check. And then the last point is that there's no actual, the only relations in this operad up there are of the form derivative of something is polynomial and something else. And it's just a general fact if you have some control over arity. It's not a fully general fact. So this control on the arities that I'm starting in degree at least 2 is strong enough to tell me that, an operand is called quasi-free when it has this property that I've presented it to you by some generators, and then all of the relations are of the form derivative of a generator is polynomial and some other generators. And if you have control over arity and some, like, well ordering on the generators, some under some conditions which are certainly hold in this example, it turns out that this L infinity operad is cofibrant in a certain model, in the projective model on kind of nice operads. It's a cofibrant replacement. So I'm saying that there's a category of reasonable operads, like ones that have some control on arity, with the property that the quasi-isomorphisms are the weak equivalences. And it has a model that I haven't told you such that L infinity is an example of a cofibrin replacement. And so this is a cofibrin replacement. And the upshot of all of this is that the homotopy category of Lie algebras, that could be a hard thing to model. You might not sort of want to know about what a map of, but you can model Lie algebras by strict L infinity algebras. So what am I saying? I'm saying the following. The upshot of this is that the derived mapping space of Lie algebras are just maps, like honest, strict maps of L infinity algebras. So sort of doing things with home. But there's another upshot, which is that statements about the Lie operand and statements about the L infinity operand kind of, if the statement is a homotopically coherent notion, then you can go between. Okay, that was all well and good, but it was distracting me from my story. This was sort of what just geometry, this is what spaces are, but I need to tell you what Poisson spaces are. So now let me just repeat the whole story with Poisson geometry. So I told you what a space was. What if I want to talk about Poisson structures on a space? Again, all of my structures are going to vanish at the origin. That'll be the control over arity that I'm erasing. So what's a Poisson space? So a Poisson manifold Well, a Poisson manifold that you know and love is a manifold. And there's a bivector field. Pi for Poisson, which solves some quadratic equation. Or equivalently, you could think of it as a bivector field, or you could think of it as a biderivation, antisymmetric biderivation. The vector fields are just derivations, and this is the same as antisymmetric biderivation. Well, I don't want to do manifolds. I want to do these infinitesimal pointed DG manifolds. So X should be an infinitesimal pointed DG manifold, which is what I just said. So it's a chain complex and some sequence of maps, some sequence of many of n to 1 maps. What's a bivector field? A vector field was an n to 1 map because it acted like the n, the fact that it had many inputs was the fact that it had some Taylor expansion. The fact that it had one output was that it was a vector field. What's a bivector field? A bivector field is a sequence of n to 2 maps. This is an n to 2 map. And you could write down this equation. I told you how to take the bracket of two vector fields with some sum over trees with two inputs, with two vertices. Similarly, the composition of bivector fields is some sum over trees with two inputs, or with two vertices, rather. We're DG geometers. I probably don't want to do Poisson geometry. I probably want to do some sort of, got to L infinity algebra, maybe I should just immediately talk about Poisson, sort of some infinity version of Poisson structure. So which is to say that rather than imposing that the vector field squares to zero, I should impose that it's D. Well, remember D, this is now playing the role of the differential on the whole manifold of some pi 3. So let's call this pi 2. And let's call this pi 1. And then, we discovered in L infinity that the most natural thing, if you want to do a cofibrin replacement of Lie, you don't just give a Jacobiator. You need some higher relations for the Jacobiator so that the map is a quasi-isomorphism. And so it's reasonable to just continue this. There should be a pi 4 such that D with pi 4 is kind of the rest of Oh, what is pi 3? Well, pi with pi, pi was a bivector field. The bracket of two bivector fields is a trivector field, automatically. This is a vector field, so this had better be a trivector field. So pi 3 is some sequence of n to 3 maps. Pi 4 is some sequence of n to 4 maps, and so on. And so, summary, the definition is whatever, a DG infinitesimal pointed Poisson manifold is well, it's a chain complex. That's the linear chart. That's the linear data on the manifold. And a sequence and a bunch of maps. And now I should probably get some degrees snuck in somewhere. So you give a bunch of maps of sort of m to n, n to m maps. So it's a maps like from sim n of x and both n and m. Let's see. The rule is that they should, neither of them's ever allowed to be zero. And they're not both allowed to be one. And so one way to summarize the rules, the neither is zero and not both one. One of them's allowed to be one, but not both of them. The product should be at least. And you, so you should have a bunch of maps from the symmetric algebra on X to the symmetric algebra on X. And then there's some degrees. And exactly what, and is of some degree. And exactly what degrees to put in depend on the degree of the Poisson. And the shifts are there, like remember the symmetric algebra on a shift of X is either the symmetric algebra on X or it's the wedge algebra on X. And that's to put in the fact that like a bivector field should be something that's anti-symmetric, but if I shift something somewhere, then I can make it somewhere at all. And I'm not gonna be able to get on the fly the, but there's some like linear equation that has these degrees plus the degree of the Poisson structure. And then there's one equation, which is that the derivative of one of these n to m maps is a sum over trees with two vertices. Like that. Okay, that's the definition. I'm going to finish the definition of Poisson. I want to make one more remark about it, which is that this is not an opera. This is not an opera. So a chain complex with this structure is not the algebras for an operet. It's not the algebras for an operet for a stupid reason. If you open up the definition of the word operet, it's only about many to one maps. So it's not an operet just because of the definition of operet. Many to one maps. And we have many to many. And now there's a problem, which is that I need to decide what context I want to do many-to-many maps. Let me finish this thought, and then I'll break in like 5 minutes. So if you want to study many-to-many maps, so before I was cavalierly saying, like, oh, there's a model on the category of operads whose quasi-isomorphisms are something somethings, and L infinity was a cofibrin replacement, and therefore the homotopy theory was the same. And you felt very good because you were like, oh yeah, I knew that L infinity algebras was like the derived way to talk about Lie algebras. And in many to many maps, you should not feel good about this tape. You should be nervous. And if you're not nervous, then you're doing it wrong. And the problem is that is to decide, you need to decide what are the allowed compositions. What compositions do you want to allow? Do you want to allow you? So some of the options you might make, for instance, what are the types of options? Well, the first question is, I only use tree-level compositions. So maybe you just want to use tree-level compositions. Do you want trees, just trees? Or do you want to allow topology, say, or graphs? If you have graphs, so we could do just trees. We could have, if you have graphs, you could ask yourself, do I really think that composition comes in a prescribed order? So I could have graphs. And then you have to decide, if you have graphs, then all of my edges are directed. I mean, these have some inputs and they have some outputs. So are you allowed to take cycles? So are you allowed to, so you could do, directed acyclic. You could just use directed acyclic graphs, or you could do graphs that do allow cycles. And that's another option for a context in which you could allow many-to-many compositions. If you're talking about graphs, do you want your graphs to be connected or not? I mean, these are all options that you have to decide. And the point is, and this disconnected question is somehow orthogonal to like whether you allow directed acyclic, whether you're allowed directed cycles or not. We said we wanted to do infinite dimensional geometry. That was something we talked briefly about. If I want to be allowed to do infinite dimensional stuff, I definitely don't want to allow directed cycles. But it does affect the theory. And I just want to flag that each of these types of allowed compositions gives you a different way of generalizing operads from to sort of a different many-to-many generalization of operads. And the homotopy theories are different. So any reasonable thing, like operads or algebras or Lie algebras or operads that allow tree compositions from many-to-many graphs, any of these, there's the abstract nonsense of homotopy theory is the same for all of them. There's some like niceness conditions that are sort of control on arity. And once you impose them, there's a good model structure, where the weak equivalences are quasi-isomorphisms and the acyclic fibrations are the fibrations are the surjections and the cofibrants are the retracts on quasi-frees. I mean, that stuff's like true for all of these models mostly. Maybe not this one. It's true for a lot of these models. But the models are different. So if you have an operad like this one, where I only needed tree-level compositions, I could interpret this operad in any of these contexts, or this not operad, this thing, whatever it was. I could interpret this thing in any of these contexts. But what it is, say, whether it's formal, whether it's quasi-isomorphic to its cohomology, might depend on which of these contexts. So what the homotopy theory of things like that are. So now I promised that I would stop at 3 so that everybody could leave, and then it would just be my Rayees and me talking for the rest of the time. So I'll take like a 5-minute break.